But swung on, hit high in the air, right center field. It's pretty well hit. Haseley going over to the track at the wall. He jumps. He didn't catch it. It comes off the fence. Conforto's coming around third. The relay to the plate by Kingery, and he is safe at home plate. And the Mets have tied the game on an RBI double by J.D. Davis off the outfield wall deep in right center. It's 4-4 here in the eighth. 0-1. Swing and a line drive into center field. That's going to fall for a base hit. Quinn comes up, and the throw to the plate is going to be way off the mark, and the Mets have the lead as Rosario scores. Andrés Giménez has given New York a 5-4 lead. Here's the kick in the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out, and Didi goes down on strikes as Diaz blows him away, and that'll do it. The Phillies cough up a 4-0 early lead, and the Mets come back to win it 5-4 as they even the series at a game apiece and send the Phillies back to the 500 mark.
That was last night right here on 94 WIP. Marks and Reese, we are back. It was the tough one last night, Ike.
Yeah, I would say so. You blow a 4-0 lead.
Yeah, been a bunch of tough ones this year.
Yeah.
Joining us right now to discuss is Ruben Amaro Jr. He joins us every Thursday at 4 o'clock. What's up, Rube?
What's happening, guys? Nice to talk with you.
Well, you know, the Phillies aren't helping matters here because we're having a rough week with the Eagles as it is. And then, you know, last night. So, listen, 24-24, they still control their destiny, Ruben. But at this point, I would have to say the concern level is very high. They're banged up. Arrieta's out. They don't know who their starting pitcher is going to be for a couple of these starts. How concerned are you?
Well, you have to be a little concerned, particularly with the way things have shaped out lately. I mean, they have some injury issues, as you talked about. Their starting rotation was already not all that impressive. And then, obviously, their bullpen has really struggled. So, you know, they're getting it done fairly well with their bats. They're playing pretty good defense, not as well as when they were streaking and winning, you know, 10 out of 11 or what have you. But, you know, help is a big thing. You know, I always believe, like, with this season, how strange it is, it's almost be a war of attrition. You know, if a team can stay healthy enough, they can stay in the hunt. And when you got 16 teams out of 30 making the playoffs, you know, if you just stay healthy and play decent baseball, you got a chance to be in the playoffs.
Yeah. Excuse me, Rube. I think this schedule sort of lends itself to the Phillies being able to get in the playoffs. I think they still will get in the playoffs. The problem, I guess, for us as fans is that I guess if you don't believe they have a deep run in them, then the energy level for the team getting in the playoffs doesn't necessarily feel the same. And I'm wondering if the extra teams have somehow watered down that. Because I think we should still be excited that they're getting in the playoffs. Just your thoughts on that.
I mean, it's exciting to be in the playoffs, but this is a different type of a season. This isn't like a regular season.
Right.
And they've done it in different ways. I mean, they've done it in fits and spurts. And they haven't been real consistent on any real part of the game, defense, offense, pitching. The offense has been pretty good all year, but still there's some inconsistencies there. I mean, yesterday's a perfect example. They get out to a 4-0 lead. They knock out the best pitcher in baseball. They don't add on, and then it ends up biting them in the rear end later on in the game. So, you know, they have to figure out ways to start winning games. Mm-hmm. And winning them consistently. And I think what's happened is there's been a bit of a strain on the club there. When you start losing games late, there is a mental letdown that is very difficult to overcome. You keep losing games late, it's like, you know, there's a huge, like, shoulder shrug that the team goes through, and it's tough to overcome. It's almost like, well, we'll score 3 or 4 runs, but shoot, a bullpen might be giving it up anyway, so what the hell is the difference? And that gets to be, you know, just like anything else, it gets to be a little bit contagious. They have to keep trying to fight through it, and they have so far, but it's tough when the bullpen keeps letting them down.
Yeah, it is. Ruben, so Bryce Harper, and I don't know if he's banged up. He DH'd again last night, but he was 0-for-5, 3 strikeouts. His average is down to 243. Last 24 games, only has 3 RBIs and 1 homer, and he's striking out a lot. There was one pitch last night where he was up in the count, and he swung it almost like a, you know, a face-high inside fastball. Is he trying to do too much? Do you think he's banged up? I mean, he is really, really struggling right now, and it's hurting the team.
It seems like it might be a combination of a combination of things. I'm not sure if he's as banged up as physically as it might be mentally, because, you know, when they went on that streak, he really wasn't swinging the bat all that well, and he had other guys supporting him. He started off the season swinging the bat extraordinarily well. The thing that concerns me about what's going on with Bryce recently is that he's not using the rest of the field. Early in the season, he was driving the ball on the left side. He was using the entire field. He was taking his walks. He was letting things kind of come to him. And I think, you know, he's a human being. He wants to have success. He wants to try to pick up for other guys. You know, Hoskins is out. There's other people out. He wants to try to help. You know, Jay Bruce is out. I think he probably might be, you know, doing a little bit too much. And Charlie Manuel used to say it all the time. Sometimes a little less means a little more production. So I think he's probably trying to do a little too much, and it's kind of snowballed on him a little bit. And hopefully he can get back to his mechanics, where he's usually in the middle of the field. I watch his mechanics, and it looks like he's drifting off the plate away to the pull side, looking to try to drive the ball out of the ballpark with a lot of his swings. And I don't see the same sort of consistency he had in the early part of the year when he was really swinging the bat well.
Well, we got it. We got another young guy, Ruben, who's going to finally make his debut tonight as a starter. Former number one overall pick. Wasn't your pick. I think he came the year after you, or maybe 2 years after you. But Mickey Moniak, did you guys – well, was he on your radar while you were here in those last couple of years as a high school player? If so, what did you think about him then? And really where he's at right now as still a developing player at 22 years old.
Yeah, I had been let go by the time they chose him. I was let go in September, and they chose him again in I guess they chose him in that the following June of 16.
Okay. I do know
that he was a very good athlete. I know that he has, you know, when you're number one, it's you know, you got immediate pressure on you. I mean, people want to see immediate results, and you know, this is a high school draft, man, and those guys sometimes take some time. Now, I've talked to some of the guys inside the organization who really believe that the guy's going to be a good, solid major league player, maybe not an impact player, but he looks like he's got the ability to do some things both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. And he's made some strides. He had a slow start to his career. There's no question. The numbers don't lie. But he's got ability, and, you know, some of these kids, I mean, it takes some time. I mean, not everybody is Mike Trout, and
right.
It does take some time for guys to develop, and hopefully he can become a good, solid major league player.
As a GM, right, and how do you balance when it's time to bring that guy up, right, as opposed to hurting his growth and his development? I would imagine that can be difficult because there's got to be pressure to get him up here as a number one overall pick.
Yeah, I think circumstances in this situation, I think the circumstances created it a little bit with injuries and such. But yeah, I think generally when you're talking about guys you think are going to be impact players for a long period of time, you don't necessarily want to bring them up until you really feel they will be impactful. That's why we waited on Dom Brown for a while. He was the number one prospect in all of baseball for a couple of years, but we wanted to make sure that when it was time for Dom Brown to come, we tried to bring him at the right time. We actually had to bring him because of the circumstance. We lost a couple of right fielders, and we weren't really getting a lot of production out of him, and we brought him to the big leagues. And then we had to send him back. But ideally, you know, you bring the guy when you feel he's ready to go, and that's what they did with Alec Bohm. He was an advanced hitter. He proved to them, at least up until that point, before they brought him from the alternate site, that he was ready to handle major league pitching. He handled himself well in spring training. He, you know, obviously never played Triple A baseball, but he was playing, handled himself very well prior to that. And you know, they brought him to the big leagues and kept him in there, and he was he's been playing his butt off. But you know, in this case, I think in Moniak's case, I think it's probably a little early, but. You know, like I said, it's a kind of a war of attrition right now. They had to bring them to the big leagues because they've lost a lot of talent, and they've lost a lot of people on the DL or the IL, and I think it was time for them to get an opportunity.
All right, Rube, what's going on with the Eagles, man? What happened on Sunday?
Yeah, man, it was a rough. God, it was rough. You know, I felt really, really badly for the Eagles fan base, and shoot, it was a devastating loss. I happen to be a believer in both Howie Roseman, and I am a big believer in Carson Wentz. He had a terrible second half, and he's much better than that. Hopefully he can grow from that loss and make some adjustments, because it's pretty obvious he made some pretty major mistakes, which you don't really see in a fourth or fifth year quarterback that's supposed to be an impact guy. But hopefully he learns from that and he has a much better game. I'm looking forward to watching these guys against the Rams, and I think they're gonna kick some butt, hopefully.
All right, there we go. Thanks, Rube.
Appreciate it, Rube.
All right, guys.
Ruben Amaro Jr. See that? He likes the Eagles too, Jack. He's on board with us.
Feeling more confident by the second.
You know, yeah, I'm not. I think we're all hoping they win Sunday.
But would you agree? Now, we haven't seen the team for a while. They had a bad loss on Sunday. Usually this is doesn't it feel like a usual Eagles win?
Yeah, you know what? Listen, if this was under normal circumstances and they had to deal with the crowd noise and the potential of playing bad in front of their home fans coming off of that type of game, I would have no doubt in my mind they were winning Sunday. Because the one thing I know under Doug Peterson, these players have responded to playing at home in must-win situations.
Yeah. Well, I went from never winning at home under Chip to
right.
always winning at home.
Well, his fan base under Doug's coaching, I don't know, they seem to bring out the best in the team, particularly at home. So if we had fans in the stands, I certainly would be locked in Eagles winning, because I know they don't want to hear what the reaction would be if they lose Sunday.
Oh, boy.
They don't want to hear that.
Well, that's a season over.
Well, I mean, that's what people act like. Listen, I played on a team that went 0-2. We opened up the link, losing to Tampa and getting blown out by New England, and finished 12-4. Season's not over.
Well, I mean,
but yeah. I know. Listen, we act like the season's over with after one loss. I know what it's going to be like after two.
Well, yeah. Isn't it only 11?
I know what it's going to be like Monday. I know it.
Is the stat that only 11% of teams that started 0-2 have made the playoffs?
Yes.
I know you were one of those teams. I'm just saying.
No. I'm saying that stat comes out every year, and you're right. When soon as teams go 0-2, they start updating that stat. What I'm telling you is, this year none of that stuff applies. There are barely any fans, if any, in the majority of these stadiums. The Eagles lost that game in part. They let the foot off the gas pedal. They got out to an early lead and thought it was going to be easy the rest of the game. Like, these are the things that I don't know how this whole thing is going to play out, man, playing in front of empty stadiums. We're going to assume it's going to be a certain way, but I don't necessarily know. I don't know. It may take 9 wins to win this division. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it might, actually.
I don't know. I don't know what a lot of these teams. Here's what I knew was going to happen Sunday and Monday. 16 teams were going to win and 16 were going to lose. That's what I knew was going to happen last Sunday. It happens every week. There aren't bye weeks. 1-0, 0-1. They got to come back Sunday, though. This Sunday. You got to come up with a game plan, man.
Mm-hmm.
Block 99.
Yeah. 215-592-9494.
And don't throw the ball in Jalen Ramsey's direction. Don't even throw it over there. Don't even throw – unless he's covering one of these tight ends, which I don't expect him to be. Hell, you never know. Don't throw the ball in Jalen Ramsey's direction with these young receivers. He'll be out there ragdolling Rager and Hightower. I mean, ragdolling them. You ever seen Jalen Ramsey get his hands on a wide receiver?
Toss him.
200-plus pounds, 220 pounds. I can imagine him running up to the line of scrimmage to play bump and run against these young guys.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, don't throw the ball over there in his direction.
215-592-9494. I think the reason why, and like Jack is like, this is a win, no problem. And I actually, the reason I like the Eagles on Sunday is that, the thought of going 0-2, right? Like there is something to winning on national TV on Sunday night on the West Coast if you're the Rams, and then flying across all the way to the East after winning that game on national TV. Like, oh, we got to win. And the Eagles should be desperate, right? Like, there should be some type of desperation in the Eagles, especially after they played last year. That's for the players and the coaches, right?
Yeah, like, of course it is. They don't want to go to 0-2 either. Right. They're not going to go in and take the game lightly. I don't know if they're good enough.
Yeah, well, that's a problem.
Well,
yeah, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if they can't win on Sunday, and you said it, like, it doesn't mean the season's over, but it means they have a tough schedule coming up. It's like, if there's ever been a desperation game here this early in the season, it's on Sunday.
Oh, no, I'm with you. You get no disagreement with me there. I'm not disagreeing there. I'm saying, after what I saw Sunday, I don't know. I know Lane is coming back this week, but that's one position on the offensive line. That's not the entire offensive line.
And he just spoke and said that he's not 100%, but he'll be out there.
There you go.
And we'll give you the sound of it coming up, because he was. He said that he's not 100%, but he's going to play. So there you go. And he said he hurt it during a scrimmage. I think it's just reading on Twitter right here. He hurt the ankle during a scrimmage.
So. A scrimmage with the Eagles.
Yeah.
They scrimmaged.
It was that Sunday night.
I mean,
Sunday
night. Like, yeah.
That's where Dillard got hurt.
Everybody got hurt.
All right, let's go to the phones. Andy in Deptford. Hello, Andy.
Yo, what's up, guys?
What's up, buddy?
What's up, Andy?
Hey, Ike, man, I have to say, anytime John got your back up against the wall with this Dougie Sean McVay thing,
Your
get out of jail card was just Doug with the Super Bowl.
Well, what else would I say?
I'm going to name three other guys, though. You got Brian Billick, mm-hmm. Barry Switzer, Gary Kubiak. You know what all three of those guys did? Won a Super Bowl, and you never heard of him after that. Come on, Ike, you know this is a year-to-year league.
Oh, it is. Okay, I'm glad you said that. Hold on. I'm glad you said that. So coming off of last year, who was the better coach?
Oh, come on, man.
You just said it was a year-to-year thing.
They had the same record.
I asked you who did a better job of coaching last year.
I would say Sean McVay. They're both offensive-minded coaches. You look where the Rams' offense ranked compared to where the Eagles' offense ranked.
Did you see the personnel out there last year?
Ike, their personnel was hurt, too. They had Todd Gurley on one wheel, on one leg. They had Robert Woods playing probably half of the game. Come on, Andy, you're not.
First of all, John doesn't have my back up against the wall with anything, because he hasn't said anything. Doug is 2-0 against Sean McVay. Doug's team won his division last year. It's gone to the playoffs three straight years and won the Super Bowl. There are several things that are in Doug's favor before I even get to the Super Bowl.
Hold on.
I'm gonna let you finish before I even get to the Super Bowl. Now let me take you back to last year when he didn't have the injuries that Doug had to deal with last year. He actually choked down the stretch. Just go look at the records and see what they were. The Eagles were 5-7 and won four straight with backup players. And the Rams, who was in the playoffs when the Eagles were at 5-7, choked their way out of the playoffs. The same team the Eagles beat with plumbers and janitors and skill position guys, the Rams went to Dallas and got the doors blown off of them.
Can I go?
Yes, you can go now.
Right. I lost a lot of confidence in Doug, okay? First of all, you look at his coaches. Oh, Groh and Welsh are coming back, and then the next day they get whacked? What? Who's controlling things? And then we look at him. He's supposed to be an offensive guru-minded coach. The Eagles' offense ranked about 15.
Who said Doug was an offensive guru? I've never heard anybody say Doug's an offensive guru.
He's an offensive-minded coach. Coaches are either offensive-minded or defensive-minded.
No, you said guru.
Okay, well, maybe he's not a guru.
You know what, Andy? That has been reserved for the other guy. I've heard Sean McVay get called an offensive guru.
McVay's offense year in and year out, they're top five. So he's doing something right with the offense. I just look at
maybe he's blowing out bad teams. Hey, Andy, maybe he's blowing. Well, I don't know what the schedule is.
He's in a better division. How's he blowing out bad teams?
Oh, my God. Do they not play bad teams?
Look at who we play. We play the Redskins and the Giants twice. That should be four wins for any team in the NFL.
When I gave you, you said it's a year-to-year thing. So we can't use the Super Bowl. So go to last year. I said Doug was at 5-7. Lost all type of skill position players, the same guys we give Carson credit for and what he did with the team. Sean McVay was actually in a playoff position and choked it away. How does that have Sean McVay ahead of Doug Peterson?
Okay, let me ask you a question, though.
Well, you didn't answer mine yet.
I said, okay, I feel you. Since the Super Bowl with Doug Peterson, Don't you agree this offense has been vanilla? Where's the creativity? You know, where's the intuitiveness?
With
where's
who? How are you going to be creative with Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Agholor?
Come on, you got two of the best tight ends. What did Belichick do when he had – what did Bill Belichick do when he had Aaron Hernandez and he had Grom? They were taking over the NFL with two tight ends and no wide receivers. Man. So don't give me that crap.
You said innovative. No, no, you said innovative. I ask you, how are you going to be innovative or creative with those guys? Freaking Nelson Agholor can't even run a reverse. The wide receiver handoff play. He can't even do that. How are you going to be dynamic and creative with Alshon Jeffrey? How? J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Mac Hollins. How are you going to be creative, Andy? John, tell me.
Well, I mean,
tell me where they had players to be creative with.
You could say that they were 5-7 last year in large part because Doug was trying to keep Carson in as Eli Manning in the pocket, and it wasn't until he allowed him to leave.
All
the
I know
pocket.
Is we're moving the goalposts. I'm talking about being creative and innovative.
I wasn't.
What personnel has been here to be creative with?
I mean, he wasn't very creative last week. That's for sure. I don't know. All I'm saying is last year, I'm not pointing to last year as Doug Peterson's greatest coaching job. Sorry. I'm not.
Well, that was the year he won the Super Bowl. I'm still trying to figure out where Sean McVay is better than Doug. That's what I'm trying to figure out at. All my stuff is actual facts. You guys are trying to tell me McVay is a better coach.
Their offense is better? It's not? Points per game?
Okay, you're right. Points per game. Great, I got you.
All right. Lesser quarterback?
Did Dallas score more points than the Eagles per game last year?
I don't know.
Yeah, you do, because they had the number one offense in the NFL. And they were sitting at home 8-8.
Okay. 215-592-9494.
They were sitting at home 8-8. You know why? Because you can score points in blowouts or against bad teams or while you're getting blown out. Like, that don't tell the whole story.
Right, I know.
Is that they average points. Dallas was the number one offense in the league. Dak threw for almost 5,000 yards, 30-plus touchdowns, 8-8 at home.
Okay, that's Dallas. The Rams were 9-7.
And they were at home, too.
We're 9-7.
At home.
With an average at best quarterback.
At home.
Okay.
And an average at best head coach. Last
four games, how did Carson Wentz look out there?
And an average at best head coach, Sean McVay.
Sometimes the quarterback.
An average at best head coach. Hey, it was 11-5 his first year. Lost at home to Atlanta as the favorites. Lost at home to Atlanta as the favorites. His first playoff game. Went to the Super Bowl, luckily, thanks to Nicole Roby Coleman and not getting flagged. And Sean Payton and Drew Brees choking that game away. And on the biggest stage, he scored 3 points. And then the following year, he didn't make the playoffs. So I'm still trying to figure out what Doug is coached around. Backup quarterbacks, won the Super Bowl, backup quarterback, gets in the playoffs, 3 straight years getting in the playoffs, 2 division titles, like beat Sean McVay head-to-head twice. I don't see where McVay is better than Doug Peterson. Other than you just like him more, because I don't know why.
No, if I was a GM that was hired and I needed a coach, I would pick Sean McVay over Doug Peterson.
It wouldn't be on resume.
I just think he's a better offensive coach.
It wouldn't be on resume.
Okay. Yeah, Doug Peterson has the better resume.
No,
I agree.
And he's beating him head-to-head.
215-592-9494. It's Marks and Reese. 215-592-9494.
Those are facts. Not opinions. Those are facts.
Here's also a fact.
Yeah.
Doug Peterson, by your own admission, cost the team a win last week.
I ain't talking about last week. We're talking about Sean McVay and Doug Peterson. Who do you want?
Right.
Who do you want? Or who's the better
coach?
I am talking about
last week because that matters. Okay. And what did Sean McVay do last week? They won, right?
So if the Eagles had a won last week, you would want Doug Peterson?
I don't know if Doug would have coached better
last
week.
I'm asking you,
maybe.
If the Eagles won, would you want Doug Peterson over McVay?
Well, they didn't win, so I can't answer that question.
But if they had won, would they? No, you don't want to answer the question. 215. You know it didn't matter.
215-5. Now, here's what I do know.
What?
Here's what I do know. Doug doesn't look very good right now as the Eagles head coach. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of confidence in him. And a lot of confidence in him from the organization.
They're coming off a loss.
215-592-9494. It's Marks and Reese. Just you and us for the rest of the show. Who's a better coach, McVay or Doug? And you'll hear from Lane Johnson on the other side explaining his injury. That's next. Marks and Reese on 94 WIP. But hey, listen, let's talk about football. That's right. Week 2 starts tonight. And check this out. To add to the excitement of Week 2, DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is bringing back their can't-miss offer. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook yet, head to the App Store now because you don't want to miss this. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new users the chance to turn $1 into $100 when they bet on any team. That's right. You can place a $1 bet on any team. If that team wins, you cash a cool Benjamin. How could you pass that up? And if you're new to DraftKings Sportsbook, head to the app now to scout their latest offers and bet with DraftKings Sportsbook, a sportsbook that goes wherever you go. DraftKings is safe, reliable, secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. So download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code Philly when you sign up, and you'll get this.